March 17, 2007, it's the Watt from Pedro Show. that was the drum thing by John Coltrane, starting off the show. And you just heard What? By Migu. And this is not in Pedro. Even though it's a Watt from Pedro show, it's actually a Watt from Austin show for today. Because it's a South by Southwest thing, and I'm here to play with Stooges. But also, I have good fortune, my good friend Steve Shelley's here with me. And because... Well, you came here to play too, right?
Yep. I was doing a couple shows with Thurston.
What was it called?
It was just called Thurston Moore. We're a three-piece right now. He's working on a solo record, and Thurston's playing guitar and singing, and I'm drumming, and Samara, who's also here, is playing violin.
Say hi, Samara.
Hey.
Okay. We're in a Sheraton near the downtown, 11th Street, and I'm going to play in a few hours. You played twice today.
Yeah.
Right? And it was the... And Thurston played acoustic guitar.
He's playing acoustic.
Right, right. And you played it, and first you played at a record store.
We played at End of an Ear, and then we played sort of a courtyard over near 5th Street. I'm not sure... Cedar Street, something or other. I forget
right.
What it was.
And then last night, you played at this Mohawk a block and a half away.
Yeah, just down the street from where we are now.
And but that was the first gig ever, right?
Yeah, we rehearsed last week. Thurston had us come up to Northampton, and we've worked on these songs for just a couple days. And then
the cherry gig was last night.
Yeah, at the last minute, he asked us if we would go to Austin, like on Tuesday or Wednesday. So we said yeah, and they got us some plane tickets, and so we did three gigs with Thurston just over the weekend.
And actually, last night was a Static Peace night at Mohawk.
Right, right.
So he picked all the bands, him and Andrew, his partner.
Yeah, they had, I don't know, 12 or 14 bands playing.
Yeah, I saw them, a lot of them. I loved it.
It was fun, and it was fun to be in one place and not worry about what you were missing or anything. I just stayed there and watched the Ecstatic Peace night, and it was good.
Now, you should tell people it's not like Sonic Youth, really.
No, it's... I don't know how to explain that it's not like Sonic Youth, but it's, Well, I mean, obviously, just the instrumentation with violin and acoustic guitar, it's a little bit different.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to kind of... weave my way in there of what I'm supposed to do for these songs. So I'm searching right now for exactly what it is I'm going to fulfill for Thurston on these tunes. And that's been good.
What about his direction when you did the pracs last week?
He doesn't give a lot of direction. He
just starts playing.
Yeah, he's pretty open. I mean, he talks about it a little bit, and he'll give you the name and talk about the song, but not too much. And I sort of have to quiz him sometimes if
you want
more of this or more of that, and he'll answer. You know, he's pretty good about it, but he gives a lot of freedom, which is very cool, but also it makes me wonder, you know, there's so many places that I can go, so it's sort of, it makes me work to find, you know, what's good for these tunes.
Now, he did one before, maybe 10 years?
Long time ago, yeah.
Psychic Hearts. And you were the drummer.
Yeah, I played drums, and my friend from Midland, Michigan, played guitar, Tim Folion.
Which you also got a band with.
Yep, we have a band called $2 Guitar.
Didn't you just do some gigs?
We just did a really, really fun tour of Italy.
France, too, because Tom Watson played bass.
Yeah, we did, and we did Paris as well. But we did, you would like this, we did 12 Italian shows in 13 days.
Yeah.
Which I was very proud of.
And you're not playing, you're paying.
Exactly. And we had a great time, and we found this great booking agent in Napoli, and he booked us in the coolest venues. Like, we didn't play rock clubs every night. We played cafes, we played houses, we played community centers and all kinds of stuff, and we just had the best tour. We had a Chris Brokaw on guitar with us on this tour. So we had two guitars and drum set, and Tim sings.
Remember we did some gigs before? What band did I have?
That was $2 Guitar.
What was I? Was I Black Gang?
It was with Tom. So it was with Tom Watson.
Yeah,
so.
The Pair of Pliers.
Yeah.
Vince Maroney on drums.
Yeah, we played in Rehoboth Beach in Delaware. And I'd never been down there before. I'd gone to this gig to play with you. So that was cool to see that part of the East Coast.
There was another band, a Rochester band, I think. Nod?
Yep, Nod, yeah. They put out a couple CDs on my label. Yeah, and they're still going. They don't do a lot, but they still work though.
Okay. $2 Guitar, new record?
There is a new record, and it came out towards the end of last year, and it's mostly a solo record. It's mostly Tim playing everything. He's got a few guests, but there's no drums on it.
Whoa.
Yeah. So he did a lot of it.
We didn't bring it, though. We don't have it here.
I don't have it, but I can send it
you
to you.
You got
to
send it. I'll play it on a future show.
Yeah, but he recorded most of it at home, and there's some electronic drums, but there's no acoustic drums, but it's a good record.
Robot program.
Yeah, there's some robots. I didn't play on it, but I put it out with him, and so we released that at the end of last year.
Did you do some of the tunes on the tour?
We did a lot of the tunes, and we totally changed them, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How long have you had the band?
It's been ever since he moved to Hoboken. That's where I've lived for 22 years now. I've lived in Hoboken, and Tim's lived there for maybe 10 or 12 years. So we've had it's been an off and on thing, but we've been doing it for a while.
Okay.
He's got like 5 or 6 CDs that he's put out on my label.
Yeah, I know. I like them. Let's see. You did bring some music.
I brought you some CDs, and
right, you're gonna play a song.
I brought you a Sonic Youth CD that we put out in December. It was sort of our goodbye kiss to Geffen. It's called The Destroyed Room, B-Sides and Rarities. And when we had re-signed with them a number of years ago, there was this clause in the contract that when you're done, you'll put together some sort of compilation, you know, whether it's a greatest hits or a greatest misses, you know, whatever. But we sort of knew that, but we'd forgotten about it. And so at the end of last year, we hear, like, you guys are supposed to compile a record for Geffen. And we just put out Rather Ripped, you know, like a few months before. And so we compiled this, like, really quickly and put it together towards the end of the year. And Geffen, like, released it, you know, so quickly. It came out by the, early December. And I'm actually doing a double vinyl edition of this through Goofin, which is a Sonic Youth label that we do a lot of our vinyl issues on.
Not SYR.
That's different. They're different labels.
More for the instrumental, trippy.
It's more like a series.
Yeah.
They're mostly instrumental, but there is some vocal stuff on SYR. But it is, mostly stuff that we record at our home studio and that we don't think is appropriate for Geffen. So we put out a lot of stuff on SYR.
And what tune is this?
This is, what we're going to play now is something called Beautiful Plateau. And it's a demo, I think, that was made around the time of, I think it's from Sonic Nurse time, and it actually didn't get put anywhere back then, so we put it on this. It didn't make the cut, but it made it onto this. And we actually are real happy with this, even though it is a B-sides and rarities, and you think that's some leftover stuff. We're actually really happy with what we came up with.
Because you can't put everything on a record that you come up with.
And this
one's just because it's lame, there's just not enough room.
Yeah, and sometimes they just don't fit, like sound-wise or mood-wise or you know. Anyways, this is one's got a lot of instrumentals on it. There's only a couple vocals. Kim sings a couple, and then there's a really long version of Diamond C at the end.
Oh, wow.
That's even longer than the one we put on Washing Machine. This one was on the 12-inch that was like the extended version.
Oh, so some things did come out on other things.
Yeah, some of these have been released. And a couple cuts from compilations that maybe, you know, not every fan has gone and bought the Grand Royal compilation that, At Home with the Groove Box. So we put Campfire, you know, from that.
Yeah, oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
That's a great tune. Oh, wow. So what are the plans now that there's no more Geffen?
There's no plan.
Yeah.
There might not be, there's no Geffen, but there might not be a record business by the time finish recording our next record. So we're not worrying about it.
Yeah.
We're actually still working with Geffen Universal. We're putting out this Daydream Deluxe Edition. Hopefully by June we'll have it together. We're finishing up the second disc sequence as we speak. We've been nailing that down, and I'm really happy that we're finally finishing this one.
You're going to tour it.
And we're going to tour with this thing, too. We're going to play, I don't know, maybe 10 shows this summer that will be where we'll play Daydream Nation in its entirety.
In sequence.
In sequence. That wasn't my idea. That was Barry's, one of the promoter's ideas.
Barry Hogan.
Yeah. I thought that we should just play it in a way that we would have done in 88, but he wanted us to do it in sequence.
Okay.
Yeah.
The 10 gigs, are they U.S. gigs?
They're about half and half. It might be a little bit more than 10. The first one's going to be at Primavera Sound Festival in Barcelona, which is it'll be our third time going there. And we've had such a great time each time. The first time I went there, we played with Television and saw a great set. And last time we played with the Stooges.
That's right.
And lots of other, Gang of Four.
Right.
So that was a great night for us to see the Stooges and Gang of Four. And this time we're going to go back and Patty is playing. Patty Smith is playing. And we're going to play Daydream Nation. That'll be the first one. There'll be a couple in the States. They just announced one in L.A.
Well, where?
It's going to be at the Greek.
Wow.
We've never played there.
It's an outdoor
area. Yeah. Yeah. We've never been there, so it'll be a new experience for us. And there's going to be one at an old school theater in Berkeley. I forget the name of it, but it's like the Berkeley Community Theater or something like that. Or
it might be at the school. They have a Greek.
It's not the Greek. It's not the Greek. It's an old school theater.
Okay.
It's where the Clash played, maybe in 78 or 79. But the name escapes me right now.
79, they played. It's the first time they played L.A. They played the Santa Monica Civic. It was an intense gig. It was like a first time a punk gig was big.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, because it was all little the whiskey and this and mask, and here it's at the Santa Monica Civic. And I didn't even know there was that many punk rockers, you know. A lot of cats you didn't really see at the club. They were a new thing. And in fact, the crowd, it must have been like 2,000, which was it was so packed that I had to piss and couldn't make back. So I pissed in the crowd and shoulder, you know, up so nobody could tell. I wasn't pissing on anyone. I was pissing on the deck. But, yeah. So here's a beautiful Plateau, Sonic Youth.
tune me out again. I've been out here for a while like a weather vane, squeaking as I spin out in the rain. A broken trampoline, pitiable fool in a poison swimming pool on an early April day. No one can play when they've been washed away or rusting in the yard light. I don't mean to take for granted when that's all I have. They're so nice to pat my head or try to make me laugh. I'm such a spaz when I crash, when my frozen end are out of oxygen. I'll do what I can to reel myself back in to the ones that understand.
Estaba solo antes de conocerte. Ahora he visto tu bandera por la puerta de mármol de la gran ciudad. Pero el amor no es una marcha triunfal, sino un frío y solitario. hablaba lo que había dentro de ti. Hoy tu boca no habla, sabe que es cierto. Recuerdo nuestro cuerpo vibrando junto con el Espíritu Santo, y cada aliento era un frío.
Okay, I got to tell you people, actually now it's March 19th, I've come back to Pedro from Texas and I've discovered that the last, 20 minutes of this first hour somehow got scissored. Pilot error, probably, my fault. I did something screwed up. So, of course, Steve Shelley went back to his pad in Hoboken, but I've got the second hour full of his spiel, talking about his timeline with the Sonic Youth, but What was really interesting was these last four songs we just played. He had something to say about all of them. And I'm a poor substitute, but I can tell you what they are. We started off with Beautiful Plateau by Sonic Youth from their new Destroyed Room album. We had Going Down by Michael Powers. Now, Michael Powers is a blues singer and guitarist, and Steve Shelley was asked by a producer man of that record to come on in and do the session, which is pretty interesting because you might not think of Steve Shelley as a blues drummer, but look how great he played. I thought that was intense. Wonderful, Steve. Good job. And then there was In My Hands by Tony Scher. That's a buddy of Steve Shelley's. I think I've played some of his stuff on my show before. Steve flowed me a CD. The guy's a bass player, but a guitarist too. I think he plays guitar on this record. And Steve's a big fan. And maybe a Brooklyn cat. And he has his own little studio and stuff. He plays with, what was the name of the band he's playing with now? Sex Mob. And then finally, there was Alleluia by Enrique Morente, a Spanish flamenco player. Alleluia, of course, a Leonard Cohen song. And what he had to tell me about Enrique was that, they got to, Sonic Youth got to play with him. Even though he's a traditional flamenco guitarist, musician, he is very interested in contemporary sounds and loves Sonic Youth. And in fact, he wants to do a record with Steve where they collaborate. And Steve asked me to do a tune. So Enrique, Steve Shelley, myself, somehow will make a three-way, maybe other musicians too on that. I know it might be on his Smells Like Records label. He's had it for like 15 years or something. That's another part that got scissored, I think, was him talking about his record company. they put out like 50 titles and used to be a little more intense. He's kind of laying back now because it was taking up so much time, it was hard to do music, but he still loves his label and he gets to put out music that he loves, that he hears or himself does or is a part of. And has something to do with the SYR series that Sonic Youth does with instrumentals, well, mostly instrumentals. And let's see, something else, Goofin', which is some outlet for Sonic Youth stuff that was through Geffen, but is now vinyl. They want it in vinyl versions. And, so a lot of good stuff from Steve. I can't exactly remember. But coming up in the second hour, I promise you, you get to hear Steve Shelley talking for himself. And sorry for this part bit that got scissored off, but I'm still getting it together, recording and doing Watt from Pedro shows on location away from my pad, using the little aluminum purse powerbook they use for chimping my spiels in. But I can also do it to facilitate my radio shows. So anyway, here's some more music, Watt from Pedro show.
begins to fade, vanishing like dust without a trace. Holy, waiting for the day, waiting for the answer, waiting for the way. Holy, waiting for the day, waiting for the answer, and waiting for the way. Thank you.
I played some music there, you know, even though starting in the second hour, we'll go to Steve's spiel and stuff. So in a way, it's not so chronological, huh? But hey, it's a radio show. I had to go fill up the rest of this first hour, though, what got scissored with spiel and then some music here. And then we'll return to that St. Patrick's Day in Austin, Texas, where Steve Shelley was talking to me in real time. But let me tell you what we just played. We started off with Don't Decide from Now, and then Holy from Lofty. And then We Hear with Our Hearts. Now, I think it's High as a Kite. You know, at first I thought it was a Japanese word or something, you know, because it, all the letters run together. I thought it was like a Hiasakita. But H-I-A-S-A-K-I-T-E. So, you know, High as a Kite, maybe. Or maybe it is Hiasakita. I don't know. I like the tune. And we finished up that little block with The Workhorse by the Riot Man. And, well, they sounded like they were from England. So did those other two bands. You look, I got to tell you something funny. I got back to Pedro, and somebody sent me a link to a newspaper story. I guess the Statesman or one of the, you know, whatever. Maybe it was a proper newspaper. I don't know. Rag. I think it was. You know, it was the Statesman. Doesn't sound like fanzine. Maybe it should be. But the reviewer, you know, during the gig at Stubbs Saturday night, right as soon as I finished with Steve, had to go and play with the Stooges, or I got to play with him. And in Skull Ring, halfway through the set, amp conked out. Or maybe I had two amps. So the chance of them both going pretty bad. It was probably a cable or something. But anyway, I'm out of the race. Well, the man in the review says, by Watt not playing and fooling with his amp, I could still hear bass. So that must mean the Stooges are using backup tape. They're playing to a backing tape or something. And this isn't correct to do primitive garage rock and roll or whatever. And God, I wish I would have printed it so I could read it to you directly. But it's hilarious because the Stooges do not use backing tapes. And there was no bass in the game while I was fooling with that. But like Ig talking to me about after the gig about it, if any song where the bass could have conked out, he said that was a good one because Ronnie plays a lot of rhythm guitar in it. And sure enough, he was playing rhythm guitar while he was singing. And so you got it wrong, Mr. Newspaper Writer Man. I think his first name was Michael, even if I recall or so. But the Stooges, what you see on the stage playing, that's what you hear and coming out of the speakers. And there's nothing against any bands who use stuff like that, but the Stooges don't. Because the way he worded it, it was like he's making a dig at us or something, you know. Or trying to get one at us. Like the Stooges don't have a history of dealing with that. Anyway, this is all for first hour. Hold tight for second hour, Watt from Pedro Show. March 17th, 2007. It's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show. Thank you. That was three-part sectional love seat by Sonic Youth. Tell us something about that song, Steve.
That was that's from the Destroyed Room, which came out in December, and that was from a session that we did at Kim and Thurston's house up in Western Massachusetts. And we actually set up in the living room and did some demos. This was around the time Jim had just started playing with us. And so we're five pieces. Yeah. And I think on this song, Jim is playing guitar, although I'm not positive.
Where'd the title come from?
We were practicing in the living room, and so all these demos were being named after pieces of furniture. Like there's one that was called the Queen Anne chair, and then there was the three part sectional love seat or whatever it is. Yeah, so they were all named
nothing deeper than that.
Yeah, yeah, it was named after the furniture that we were surrounded while we were recording these demos.
No, you've been in the band 22 years.
Yeah, I joined in 85.
How'd that happen?
I don't know.
You don't know.
Just lucky, I guess.
You were in a band, The Crucifux.
Yeah, I was in this band called The Crucifux, and I was also in a band
of Michigan.
Yep.
Right, people from Michigan show you their hand.
Yep. I'm from right there on the hand. You guys can't see, but I'm showing Mike the middle of the mitten.
Hence the name.
Yes, Midland. I'm from there, and this band, The Crucifux, was in East Lansing, and I played with them.
Michigan State.
Yep, that's where MSU is, yep. And we've got U of M at Ann Arbor.
Where the Stooges
are
from.
Yeah. And at the same time I was in this band, I was in another band with my old friend, Tim Foyon, called Spastic Rhythm Tarts. And so I was in both of these bands, and I guess the Crucifux kind of know the story. It was a little more aggro, and we were a little bit outside of, there was this hardcore scene. But we didn't really fit in there, and we were more inspired by, I always tell people that we were inspired by SST acts like the Minutemen and the Meat Puppets and that type of music, and not so much by sort of the generic hardcore thing that was happening at the time.
Right.
So, but at the same time, I was in this band called Spastic Rhythm Tarts that was very much influenced by post-punk music, a lot of it from England, whether it was the Pop Group or the Slits or Joy Division or Rip Rig and Panic and, you know, all like things from Gang of Four, a lot of Gang of Four, Birthday Party. It was more inspired by that kind of stuff. And that music was a little bit closer to my heart. And it was also maybe a little bit closer to where I wound up playing with Sonic Youth.
Now, they had three drummers.
Yep. Before I joined, there was Richard Edson and Bob Bird and Jim Sklavounos. And I think many other drummers, too, that were maybe only there for one show or one practice.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
One practice?
Yeah, yeah. But these are the recorded drummers, though. Or sometimes I think they gave up having auditions and they would just have drummers show up at the show, you know. Okay, come to the gig. We'll see if you got it, you know. But I had met Thurston Lee and eventually Kim and joined the band in spring of '85.
Yeah, but how did it happen? You went to their gigs when they rolled through Michigan?
No, I
didn't tour the U.S.
Yeah, yeah, I'd never seen the band. I was a really big fan. The Crucifux were going to have Lee record an EP of ours. We were going to go to Wharton Studio, Wharton Tears place, and record an EP, like a six-song EP.
We recorded there a few times.
Yeah.
Right?
For Lucky Sperms. Yeah.
And also a song with Lee, Visions of Johanna.
Yep, with Robert Quine on guitar.
Who was the organ player? I couldn't remember his name.
I know, it was someone that played with Glenn. It was one of Glenn's keyboard players. Yeah, yeah. The name escapes me, too.
I played that song on a show a while back.
Yeah.
It's really neat. Bob Quine really ripping the solos.
Yeah. I haven't heard that in a while. I'd like to hear that.
I also played this trippy thing, that a Dylan song that Kim and Thurston did.
Yeah, yeah, with Epic.
Sitting on a Bob Wire.
Yeah.
Epic sound.
Yeah, with our friend Epic drumming. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was around the same time.
So Lee was going to produce...
He was going to produce a record by us, but the band didn't make it. We imploded before we ever got to New York to record this thing. And I had met Thurston Lee at a Crucifix show at CBGB's maybe the year before. And I'd spoke to them a few times on the phone, and I had talked to Thurston about, well, I'm going to leave Michigan, and I'm either going to move to San Francisco or Austin, Texas. And Thurston's like, ah, you don't want to move there. You know, you should move to New York. They always need a drummer in New York. And they didn't need it. He didn't need a drummer because Bob Burt right there. Okay. Yeah. So, I was from a small town. I was much more comfortable with thinking about Austin, Texas or San Francisco, where I'd met people like the Dicks and Big Boys and Big Boys here, Dicks and...
We saw Tim Kerr today.
Yeah, yeah. Tim Kerr was at the record store today where Thurston played. But
yeah, but you played too.
Yeah. I'm just a side mouse, but I'm trying to help him get his thing across. I'm a collaborator.
So you're torn between which town to move.
Yeah, yeah. And Thurston's telling me to go to New York, and Sonic has a tour with Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds coming up in England through Paul Smith. And they need someone to watch the dog. And so me and a buddy, actually the bass player of the Crucifix, we were both fed up with Michigan and with this band. We drive to New York and we house sit and dog sit. And the good thing for us is that we were having a great time being in New York and just, you know, checking it out every day, being young guys and never really having spent any time other than a day or two in New York. Seeing all the music and doing everything that you can do there. And the Sonic Youth Tour kept on getting extended. And so our time there kept on getting extended. So we were having a great time. And I'd been going to a few auditions. I did bring a drum kit with me when I went to New York. And there wasn't anything that I felt anything towards. And it's funny because I was, you know...
You have the drums up in...
Yeah. Pad. I had the drums in their little pad that you stayed
that?
At.
Yeah, Elridge.
Yeah, and... You know, it's funny because
Wind on each end.
Bad Moon had just come out, and I was surrounded by sort of all the gear that comes with a new release. You know, like the posters and everything. And just I'm looking at these posters every day, and like, well, I really would like to be in a band. You know, like the Sonic Youth band, but something that's unique on its own. I didn't know where I was going to find that, and. Kim and Thurston and Lee all came home from this tour, and Bob had left the band, and so at the end of the tour, I'm not sure when. Yeah, I always try and tell this story, but Bob should tell that part of the story.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly when he left or what was up, but Kim and Thurston came home, and I was sort of all packed. I had found a sublet at another neighborhood.
You were going to stay in New York.
Yeah, I decided I was going to stay for a while. And they asked me to drum for the band then and there, and no audition and no anything. I was in, and I don't know, my luckiest day in my life.
What's
I don't know.
What's the first song you played with them?
I'm not sure what the first song I played, but one of the first songs was we worked on Expressway to Your Skull and Green Light.
So Evil Stuff.
Yeah, we were working on Evil Stuff, and. And I'm sure they were teaching me the Bad Moon songs, because that had just come out. And my first tour with the band, we played songs that I, you know, didn't help write at all. It was all catalog stuff. And so I played Bob's music for about a year, you know.
What was the first gig?
There was still one New York gig. I went to... the club in the East Village, the real little Pyramid.
Oh yeah.
I went to the Pyramid
yeah.
Club and I saw the band play with Bob, and it was the only time I'd ever seen the band play. I'd never seen them play. My buddy had. He'd seen them in Ann Arbor because he was a year or two older than me. So they did get to Michigan once, but I was too young to get to the gig, and so I got to see them play, and it was just fantastic. It was just a wonderful, wonderful set. And just, you know, sitting in the front row, just watching this thing, and can't, you know, I couldn't believe that I was going to be a part of this. And I went backstage in the basement of the pyramid. I met all these New Yorkers, and you know, Lydia Lunch is down there, and you know, I meet Lydia for the first time, and it's just, you know, overwhelming. And you know, it was a very, very fortunate time that it, you know, it fell together this way.
Yeah. Now, what was the first gig you played with him?
The first gig that I played was I believe it was at the Peppermint Lounge.
I played there.
Where I'd seen the Minutemen play while Kim and Thurston were out of town.
Oh,
and
wow.
And I'd come and seen you guys. And funny thing that happened at the Peppermint Lounge at the Minutemen gig is I talked to the singer of Rad at Rad R. I believe his name is Victor. Victor, I was talking to him and telling him, you know, I was a drummer. I was looking for, you know, looking for a group. And after a while, he figured out that I was staying at Kim and Thurston's, and he kind of blew me off in a good-natured way. But he was like, "Oh, if you know Kim and Thurston, you're going to be all right. You know, you don't." And so he.
You know, what's funny about that band? When I did the Bronca thing last year with the 100.
Yeah, 100 guitars.
Only 64 guitars,
okay.
And 20 basses, and Virgil on drums, Moorhead, and the conductor was John Meyer. From Rad at Rad R, I had played with them.
Right.
25 years ago.
You played with Rad at
R? Yeah, oh. Minutemen played with them.
Okay.
And they might have been Sonic Youth a little bit.
Yeah.
And here, and at first I didn't realize it, but man, isn't that weird how all the time goes by. And
yeah.
He's a conductor. He got a PhD in music. And yeah.
Oh, he wasn't just a rock and roll conductor. He was a real conductor.
Yeah. In fact, he was key, man, because that piece was tough, Symphony No. 13.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. Glenn wrote a great thing. Did you know that Glenn, Lee and Thurston had played with them?
Yeah, I knew of it.
He was really instrumental?
Yeah, of course, of course.
I didn't know anything about it.
Yeah.
I had a Theoretical Girls single, but I never made the connection.
Yeah, no, of course I knew that. And especially when I joined the band, you know, heard Lee and Thurston talk about it a great deal.
I think that's the first time they played together was with Glenn.
Could be. But, you know, the funny thing is I've never met Glenn in all my years in New York. And I've seen him play, and I've seen him in art galleries, and I've seen him on the street. But I've never been introduced to him. I'm sort of okay with it because he's Glenn, and he's doing his thing, and, you know, I've met Richard Edson, which was a real pleasure, and I know Bob, because we live in the same town.
What about Reg? You know Reg?
Who's Reg?
He does music, his wife, and helps with the pieces.
No.
She's got her own band.
No, no.
And she plays in New York City.
No, no, I've seen him play with her, but I have not met, but yeah. I met all the other Sonic Youth.
See, all New Yorkers aren't as connected as people.
No, no, no.
Well, you're across the river in Hoboken anyway.
Yeah, I'm sort of isolated over there.
It did have its scene, though. So, okay, you do the
Peppermint Lounge.
Peppermint Lounge with them. What was that gig like for you?
Well, that gig was fun. I think as sort of a transitional phase, we had Bob Burt join us for a song or two. So we had two drummers for a couple tunes, and that was fun. And
two trap sets?
Yeah, or maybe we just had some extra stuff to bang on. I don't think there were two trap sets. And I think maybe that day we'd also filmed some of that Death Valley 69 video. And we had both drummers in the video. We had Bob in the front half of the video, and then we had...
Was Lydia there? Because she
Lydia's
the song.
Lydia's in the video. Richard Kern shot the video.
Oh, yeah, the video's got cruise missiles or something.
Yeah.
And her sprawling around.
Yeah. And we're kind of acting like Manson Youth or something. These Long Island kids. Yeah, we're supposed to be Long Island kids who are into Satan, who think Satan's totally cool or something.
So, were you scared at that first gig?
No.
That would have been.
I don't know. I've always just wanted to do this so much. I've never had that much fear. You know, I had fear today and yesterday, playing, you know, all these new songs with Thurston. But just because I want to do good, you know, for his tunes. But
those were new for you then. Yeah, you wanted to do good.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know. I have confidence to a degree, but I always want to do better.
Where did you guys pack? I always wonder how New Yorkers prac.
Man, we've...
Oh, I've seen some of your
pads. Yeah, we've practiced in some crazy places, but...
Those days.
The first place that I practiced with the band was in this basement that was off of Houston Street, that was owned by this promoter. Her name was Ruth Polsky. She used to promote gigs at Danceteria.
Oh,
and for some reason, we were in her, a basement that was related to her place. And it was just a cruddy old basement with a.
Did you share with bands?
At that one, I don't think we did, but we did share with bands at other places.
Yeah.
Even today, our studio we share with other people. So, you know,
how did you get your stuff around for gigs?
I don't know. You always had to like hire a friend with a van back in those days.
Because transpo in Manhattan.
Yeah, and no cell phone, no email. So you know you had to be there, and when you said you were going to be there, and move your shit.
Yeah. Okay. So.
But actually, I did bring a van to New York from Michigan. So for a while we had a van.
You were the wheels. Owned.
Yeah, I had the wheels for a while.
I drove a van from
Michigan to New York, and because I had to carry drums around somehow.
Now you do that gig. Do you record while you're away?
No.
Because Evil's the first thing.
Yeah,
you record
yeah.
Them,
I didn't
right?
record for a while, and it didn't come out until '86.
But I was there.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
In fact, I got to play with you on a Kim Fowley tune called Bubblegum.
Yes.
And In the Kingdom something.
Number 19.
Yeah, number
19. That was actually, that song was pasted together.
Yeah, I know, because it was only me and you playing at first.
Yeah, and Lee would kind of direct us to sort of what kind of riff or...
Because he had a poem that was going to go to it.
So we were doing these different little... music jams and Lee would chop them up and
I
then
had never done something like that before.
That was fun and
all my recording was almost like a gig in front of a microphone.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
This was this whole different way. And they, even the studio BC, it was Martin BC.
Yeah,
I called it BC. Maybe it was in Brooklyn.
It was in Brooklyn. Yeah.
And it was a trip because
it's still the same place.
Really,
he's still there. Yeah.
And there wasn't a separate control room.
Yeah,
the
Martin,
board was
Martin
right
has a
room.
Really weird setup where the board is in the same room as where you would put the drum kit or something. There are ISO booths where you can put guitar amps and stuff, but he's got his mixing board right out there. So there's no glass wall or any of that,
I
think, you know, Martin really, really enjoys that. I'm not sure if his studio is still like that. I haven't been there in a while. But,
yeah, that was 20 years
yeah.
ago.
Yeah. But
first time you recorded, so you did a lot of gigs before the recording.
Yeah, we did a whole tour that was set up by Gerard from Homestead, and
who put out the Bad Moon.
Yeah, and so we did a whole U.S. tour before I had really recorded with the band.
What was that tour like?
Well, that tour was good. I remember I knew a lot more people on that tour than the rest of the band did, because I've been to all those cities in the Midwest and in the South and everything where they'd sort of only hit pockets so far.
And a lot of their tour was Europe.
Yeah, yeah, they spent a lot of time in Europe where I'd never been to Europe when I joined the band. I'd never been in a jet plane, so and I'd never been to Japan or any all those places we've gone since. But the tour was a lot of fun. We played with a lot of bands that I knew. Through my days with the Crucifix and the Spastic Rhythm Tarts, and we played with Dick Kreutzen, and we played with Mack Demench, and a lot of those bands from the Midwest.
Sure.
And I'm not sure if we played with Saccharin right away or if that was a little bit later. But we played with Saccharin, and we played with the Minutemen once more at an SST event that was sort of at a loading dock or something.
Yeah, of a warehouse downtown L.A.
Yeah, and, you know, and I met so many people, you know, starting to meet the SST people, like, you know, Dez, and meeting someone like Dave Markey, who's been around ever since. So, you know, those are pretty okay days and okay tours. And it was just...
this is the first my time getting to see the band. Yeah. And it was way different band than I had seen. Man, I thought we were trying to do some adventures, and me and D. Boone both felt like Chuck Berry or something. Like all, I remember they had this book of tuning. There's a band. And just the way they tune, period.
Yeah.
You know,
well, we didn't have roadies then. We had
we
had Suzanne with us, I think, on the first trip, and she had never done lights before. But we threw her in the lighting booth of every club that we were at, and she just blinked them, you know, blinked the lights, and she started, you know, she was a close friend and a fan of the band, and we couldn't have found a better lighting person because she felt a real affinity with what we were doing. So Suzanne was with us for years, but it was just the four of us and Suzanne, and we were in, you know, and Mike's done this countless times, but we're in the van and we're going from city to city, and that was pretty much it.
But you make transition from Homestead to SST.
SST,
SST Records, so it's sister.
Yeah, I think I think that came about just before we recorded Evol or something, where I don't know if SST reached out to the band, because I was a new member, so involved with the day-to-day business.
In fact, a lot of the songs were already written.
Yeah.
And so you're learning them and fleshing them out.
Yeah.
So the first record where you're really involved is Sister.
No, we wrote Evol all together. It was not written previously.
Oh, I thought you learned Expressway.
Well, we worked on Expressway. I mean, Thurston had, you know, bits of Expressway from the first rehearsal. But like everything, it kind of goes through this blender with everybody. No matter how much of a finished tune someone brings in, it still gets altered, and we still consider it writing at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I remember staying there and seeing the words to Star Power just on a paper on the deck. You know?
Yeah.
I didn't know it was going to end up a song on an album. This is words on a paper that's on the deck.
Yeah.
And then I remember the album came out. I said, I've seen these before. And it was sort of like, because D. Boom would scribble things, and he'd never think they were going to, he'd just write down thoughts, and I'd turn them into songs, and he'd be like, whoa, this is a song. It was just something you jot down, and I thought the same thing when I saw Star Power. I said, I see this thing. So even though we had some parts before you joined the band, it didn't get fleshed out until you were...
Well, yeah, we worked on it all together, yeah.
What drum set did you use? That one you brought out?
That's a funny question. No one's asked me that in years. But, yeah, I brought a kit with me, and it was an old Pearl kit. And you probably saw me play it a couple times in the first couple tours. And I had that until... I had that kit for a while. I had it until Jay Maskus went shopping with me on 48th Street, and we had just signed to Manny's or somewhere, and we had just signed to Geffen Records, and
oh wow, it's the late 80s.
Yeah, 90. Yeah, so I had that that Pearl kit with me. It wasn't the greatest kit either, so I had it for a while.
Keith Moon played Pearls. Premieres. Now, who played Pearl?
No one. Peter Criss.
Okay, that's right.
Me and Peter Criss played Pearl. And Jay went to the music store with me, and I'm from Michigan. I'm a pretty conservative person. You know, I'm a thrifty person, as Mike knows. And so we just signed the Geffen Records, and I'm going to buy a drum kit. And the sales guy goes, like, well, what price range are you looking at? And Jay, in his voice, goes, money is no object. And so we end up, Jay helps me shop and buy this Brady drum kit, which is from Australia.
So
to answer your question, I had a Pearl kit until I bought this Brady thing. And now I play all old... I like a lot of 60s kits, usually Ludwigs or Gretsch kits. Yeah.
And what was it, four or five?
Five piece, counting snare.
Five,
yeah. I always use two rack toms.
I know with the Sister record, you were playing other stuff. Like PCH has what, an ashtray? Or what do you beat on?
It's just a big piece of metal.
Okay.
Yeah.
You weren't doing that on the Evol yet, though.
No, it was probably just drum kit, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you just had moved on. I really like Sister, but I like Evol a lot, too. But, man, there's something about that.
Well, Sister was weird. That was our first time to see her sound, and
he was in another place at that time.
Yeah, he was in another location.
Like the lobby of a hotel?
Yeah. I was going to say it's where the Scientologists are, but actually, you know, it's now a hotel. And that was weird. I mean, we kind of expected that record was going to sound a little bit different, you know, and we were still learning how to record and how to get our live sound on a tape. And it took us a while. I think it I think it really took us until Dirty, until we were, you know, until we worked with Butch Vig, that we were really felt like we kind of sound like this, you know. And even that record
was Martin. Sisters, Walter.
Yeah, but Walter didn't record us. It was an engineer that worked there.
I went to some of those sessions.
Yeah.
I can't.
God, what? He's since passed away. His name. You hear his voice at the beginning of Stereo Sanctity, where he's saying seven. I'm sorry, his name escapes me right now.
That's terrible. That took me a long time.
Yeah. I have I take ginkgo for it. I don't know if it's doing anything.
Yeah, I've done that. Yeah.
It also helps for the constant ringing of the ears. Your ears from tinnitus from the cymbals and snare drum and all that.
So you tore that record.
Yeah.
What was those tours like compared to the Evil ones?
Well, those tours were good, and we spent a lot of time with Firehose on the sister tours.
That's right. It was the first Firehose tour.
Yeah. And I don't know. So those days, it was like you kind of had a gang. You know, you had your band, and you had the other band that you were with for a week or two. And whether
you had the Orange Van. You guys changed boats.
Yeah.
I think remember, the guitars didn't have cases. There was a shelf. And they're like, all the guitars got thrown under that shelf.
Oh, really? Really? They didn't have cases at all? I don't remember that.
Yeah, they opened up the back doors and you had a shelf.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was a little space under it. They just got all shoved in. She had a lot.
Yeah.
It was like 12 of them.
Yeah, it was not as many as we travel with today, but it was a lot then because we had to carry them all back then.
Yeah, for a band, it was a lot different than most band stories.
Yeah.
And,
but those are good tours, and and we toured with a lot of SST bands back then, and you know Dinosaur were just coming out, which was a blast when those first records came out.
I think Firehose plays with you and them in Amherst. It's the last gig of the tour.
Mm-hmm.
And then you guys take us to Europe.
Yeah,
which was wild. They had already been there a few times. Was that your first Europe?
No, I'd gone there even in 85, even before Evol. We'd gone to Europe, and I'd played all these crazy festivals and played with a lot of festivals with a lot of bands that were my heroes back then, and so it was, those days were just pretty eye-opening, you know, all the music that I got to see and you know, just traveling to countries for the first time and just a lot of fun, a lot of new experiences.
Now the record after that,
for Daydream Nation,
it's Daydream, and that's pretty tour de force. Was it planned to be a?
Well, I think at a certain point we knew that we had too many songs for a single album, and so we were sort of making fun of ourselves by talking about classic double LPs, you know.
Oh, in between though, isn't there Chicone Youth?
Yeah, I guess we recorded that in between, but we didn't put it out because maybe Paul Smith recommended that we put out the next Sonic Youth record, and then
she actually recorded that.
Yeah, I believe so.
Did you know about this idea about you're going to do the Beatles White Album?
Oh yeah, I was totally in love with that because I'm a Beatles freak.
Right, right, right.
So ever since I was like,
but that was a real plan. You were going.
Yeah, it was. We really talked about it, but we never did any of the work.
Right.
So
and there's a lot of tunes. That's a double album.
Yeah, I really wanted to do it. I thought we could have done something really interesting, but then the story is that Pussy Galore quickly got out a version of Exile on Main Street. So. Kind of took the wind out of our sails, and we didn't really need to make such a statement because they already did it.
Right, right. So when the idea goes, because we had done the Chicone Youth single, I did one side, you guys did the other side, but it's not much to do with the album. I know you guys took my demo and put it on.
Yeah.
But the other stuff is not really Madonna songs.
Yeah.
Kim singing to a karaoke thing of Robert Palmer.
Yeah, I guess the only way that it really relates to the single that we all did together is that it's sort of based on or inspired by or working with 80s pop things. You know, like Kim singing to a karaoke version of Robert Palmer and
Jay jams on it a little bit.
What's that?
Doesn't Jay jam on?
Jay plays guitar on a couple songs, and we fooled around with sampling and with beatboxes on it, and that stuff was really, really happening right then, but not in our world. You know, it was all in the hip-hop world. And so we never set out to make a hip-hop record, but we just set out to do something that was a little bit different from us getting together and writing 10 songs. And we got together and we didn't write anything. We just went and started playing in the studio over at Wharton's studio and just came up with a lot of things for that. And there's a couple covers. And so you're right. It's not too similar to the Ciccone single that we all did together.
And then it's really not like any other Sonic Youth record. It's way different.
Yeah. Whenever I talk to Lee about that record, we always talk about how it, you know, if anything, it's kind of like an Eno record. You know, it's got all these little short bits, kind of like he did in those early solo albums. And but I like that record. It's I would probably edit some of it if I had the, you know, if I was turning back time, but I'm not. But I like it. We reissued it last year. And,
right. But then the Daydream comes, and those got proper songs.
And yeah, and that's something we worked on for a long time, and you know, as we'd been playing together live for longer, all these songs were having these long intros and long outros and long jam in the middle, and so there were all these long songs, you know, like The Sprawl or Across the Breeze or even Teenage Riot is kind of long. And it got to grow where it wouldn't fit on one LP, and we knew it was going to be a double album, so we started playing with what is a double album, and people, like you were talking to me yesterday about ELP, who I've never owned an ELP album, but...
Don't worry, yeah.
I'm sort of ready, you know, but, you know, bands like that had songs, you know, that had big words like trilogy and things like, you know, and whether it was Yes or ELP and we kind of took the runes or whatever you want to call them of our four symbols from Led Zeppelin 4, you know, so we were just playing around with classic rock ideas as far as mixed in inside of that, you know, that beautiful cover of Gerhard Richter's painting. But so that's kind of just where we were fooling around with, like, you know, not trying to be too serious about putting out a double album.
No, but...
I guess the only people we knew that had put out double albums were Husker Du and the Minutemen, you know.
But you don't put it on SST, you change.
Norton's
Paul
Smith right.
has something to do with that.
Yeah, we moved to Blast First, which had now started a U.S. company up, and Blast First was based in London originally, and he started up in New York, so he had two versions of the label, and he was distributed by Enigma, I think, over here. And so you're right, we left SST at that time and put it out on Blast First Enigma. And I guess Ciccone Youth came out a few months later, which kind of sounds strange to me, but I guess that's how it happened.
Yeah, that's what I remember too. Yeah. He also put out a 12-inch of the single.
Of Candle?
No.
Of Master Dick?
Into the groovy,
yeah.
Burning up,
yeah.
That was a Blast First thing.
I
think that might have been the first thing.
Yeah, and he put that out in the UK,
right?
Yeah.
Not here in the US. In the US, it was a New Alliance thing on 7.
Yep.
But in England, I remember. And now you tour Daydream Nation. That's the band starts blowing up a little bit, huh?
I guess so. I mean,
yeah,
it
that's what I remember.
I mean, it seemed
I'm not talking like.
Yeah. I mean, it seemed like it was pretty gradual. Each record and each tour, we were getting better at what we were doing, and you play a slightly bigger place the next time, and you get more kids the next time, and you play more cities, or you're
also
more organized.
The times were changing too.
Yeah,
I think kids were getting more open-minded.
Yeah, and also. The records were finally getting in the stores where they were supposed to be. Because I remember the first time I went back to Michigan after Evol came out and seeing it. And Evol was on SST. It's an American label. And the only place I could find a Sonic Youth record at my old hometown record store was in the import bin.
But that was like that with a lot of shit.
And, you know, it's like, you know, twice as much. And so it was a long fight for us to, you know... To get your records in every store and get them in a...
I want to ask you about, Sister, the poster.
What's the poster?
It's a giant-ass poster for Sister.
Yeah. Well, that was
like the album cover kind of. That thing made its way into almost every record store.
Well, that was a Subway poster. Those were London posters. Because they did what they called Subway posters. They're huge and...
But they weren't that common in the U.S.
No,
you didn't
no.
see those in the record.
No.
That was so unique.
Yeah.
You guys had this giant-ass poster.
Yeah. I guess we must have asked... I'm not sure if we had SST print some up or if we had Paul ship some in.
Might have been a Carducci idea.
Yeah, but it was a beautiful poster.
Who made that cover?
I think Kim made the cover.
Yeah, it's great, man.
Kim,
first one was that long leg lady.
Yeah.
Evo, I mean, the first one.
Yeah. I think Kim made the cover, or Kim and Thurston, and basically they took images that... that each one of us had thrown together, and one of the inspirations for the cover was the Bad Seed EP by the Birthday Party,
because
they had pasted the four of their portraits of the band members sort of with a cross upside down cross going on or something, and I think we took a little bit of you can
see we've got like Disneyland and planets
Yeah, we all like collected postcards or whatever that we'd snapshots. I think there's a postcard from the Madonna Hotel. You know.
That's right.
Yeah,
Cali.
And yeah, Northern Cali. And
no, it's more by San Luis Obispo.
Okay, so that's not northern. It's mid.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not even that.
Okay.
Because actually, San Francisco's mid.
Okay. Oh, right.
I think they call it North Cal, but if you look at a map.
Yeah. Being an outsider, I think of.
But not
I think
a lot of
San
people
Francisco's
live north of San Francisco, so.
Okay.
It's more. It's like about 100 miles north to L.A.
Okay. Oh, it's that close to L.A.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
But so yeah, it's just things that we collected and
coast-wise, close to where Jimmy Dean was killed.
Ah, okay.
If you went towards the water, and it's got every room's got a theme.
Yep. Yep.
Did you stay? I've never stayed there.
Yeah, I've stayed there a couple times. Yeah, it's weird.
Was it your postcard?
I don't think so. I don't think I've stayed there yet. I think we got that from someone on tour.
Okay. So, okay, Daydream Nation. And the tour is a little bigger. The records are getting in the stores.
The crew gets a little bit bigger. We have a sound person now.
That's right.
We picked up Terry Pearson in again.
Well, Austin came.
Austin, Texas. We first met him at the Continental Club.
Right, right.
So Austin has been a big part of our life. It's funny.
Well, driving around with Thurston today, he knew where everything was.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we've been coming here for years, and
I've come here for years, too. I can't remember.
And I was coming here before I was in the band, so it's nice to be here. I don't know, we always seem to meet nice people, you know.
Oh, yeah, it's good. If I had to live in Texas, I would live in Austin.
Yeah.
It's music.
I think it's, yeah.
The next thing, though, that's big change.
Moving to Geffen,
yeah.
And we're recording Goo, which was a lot of work and
a lot of different things.
We're learning how to just. We're still finding our way through a multi-track studio,
Oh yeah, where'd you record Daydream?
Daydream was recorded at Green Street,
New York City.
Yeah, on Green Street. It's in Soho, and we recorded with this guy Nick Sensano. And he's teaching at NYU now, and I think he's still engineering, too.
Okay.
And he was involved in the studio called Green Street that they were pretty heavily involved with a lot of hip-hop stuff. They were recording a lot of the Bomb Squad stuff. A lot of the productions by the Bomb Squad would include the Public Enemy records. And I think Nick had even recorded with Ice Cube back then. But we met him, and we just really, really liked this guy, Nick, and we wound up doing Daydream Nation with him, and we did the first part of Goo with him.
Yeah, I was going to just say, because there's an accidental meeting, right, with Chuck D?
Right.
And he ends up on the tune?
Yeah, yeah, because we're both recording at the same time at Green Street Studio, and Kim has a song called Cool Thing, and it's sort of inspired by... LL Cool J and maybe a white woman's fascination with beautiful black guy and we have a middle piece in it and we're like maybe Chuck could do something in here, and so he does something and
everybody
knows. And I'm not sure what he thought or how he felt, but that's what happened and I guess it's history now.
There's this movie called Sir Drone.
Yeah, a lot of our Goo album is based on this Pettibone movie that stars you and Mike Kelly. Yeah, and there's two characters in the movie named Scooter and Jinx.
And Goo.
And Goo.
The drummer.
Yeah.
She ends up, the girlfriend ended up joining them.
Yeah, yeah. And it's about, I mean.
Punk band in the 70s.
Yeah, Thurston and I, talking about that movie, one of our favorite bits is about how punk one side of the stage is and how new wave one of the other. Like, I think we used that line forever. Like, whenever we thought someone was not giving their all in a practice, it was like, hey, your side's getting a little new wave.
Raymond, that script was too much. I remember reading that thing and was like, oh, my God. It was very accurate, though, yeah. In a lot of ways.
But, yeah, so that movie that Raymond made was an inspiration for a lot of the titles and characters that we used in this record, Goo. And also Raymond did the cover, which was a beautiful cover, and he did a lot of singles and posters and T-shirts for us all at that time.
Right.
And just
lettering on the label.
Yeah, just beautiful stuff, that all this stuff of Raymond's that we got to use for that record.
Yeah. Generous man. People call him Saint Raymond sometimes, I hear. But I love him. I love him. Now, is it different with it? Now it's a different kind of company. Not just different company, but different kind of company.
Yeah, it was a jump. You know, I guess as we kept on growing as a band and the popularity was growing, it would get really frustrating to be in a city. You know, you'd be on tour and, you know, night after night, have kids come up to you and say, I can't find your records in my town. And so that was one thing. You know, we kept on talking about this better distribution, you know.
Right.
And so that was one of the things that brought us to a major. And we were with Geffen for, you know, almost 18 years, you know. And we're still working on projects with them, even though we're not signed to the label right now. We're finishing up this Daydream Deluxe Edition, which is going to come out sometime this year. And putting out some DVDs of some of the old videos that we made. So we're still working with those guys, but we just don't have a working contract right now.
The first part was done at Green Street. Where was the rest of it done?
Of Goo? I think it was done at this... I think we mixed at the studio called Right Track, sort of in the Times Square area.
And who
we
did
mixed
it?
With Ron St. Germain, who had mixed Eye
Bad
Against
Brains.
Eye. Yeah, Bad Brains record. And of course, a bunch of other recordings too. But I think the Bad Brains was one of the reasons we worked with him. And it wasn't a perfect fit with Ron, but we got the album done, and that was a record that we were sort of conflicted about for years. If we, you know, I think it wasn't until we went back to it a couple years ago and remastered it, put out this deluxe edition of it, that we all kind of really embraced that album. We always liked the songs. But we weren't sure about the recording, and I think
the tours are a little different.
Yeah, the tours are getting bigger, and we're not in a bus yet, but we're traveling in a van or two, and we've got a crew of people that actually help us make a good show every night. Because, you know, even though you have a memory of how great those early shows are, there's a lot of downtime in those shows. You know, when the guys are tuning, because, you know, we didn't have enough guitars to just go from one song to the other, so. There was a lot of dead air on stage, you know, and so as great as those days were, it was really nice to have a crew that are there to help you present yourself as best as you can each night.
Yeah. You're still touring overseas, too.
Yeah.
But now you're doing a lot more U.S. tour. That's a big difference from the older days. Huh?
Yeah. Or at least equal time,
which.
And now there's more territories to go to, because by
That's
the time
right.
of Daydream... Nation, we'd gone to Japan for the first time, to Australia for the first time.
Even Russia.
And we'd gone to the Soviet Union, and we were playing with bands like Mudhoney and the Boredoms for the first time. So we're meeting a lot of people that are still around, still
right,
a part
right,
of our
right.
life.
Yeah. And then the one after that, Dirty, huh?
Yeah, then we recorded Dirty at the studio, the Magic Shop that I talked about earlier, and a great little studio. We recorded with Butch Vig, who had just recorded Nevermind with Nirvana. And we had actually known of Butch since his days in Madison, Wisconsin. Well, he was still based in Madison then. I'm not sure if he is anymore. But we'd known him when he was recording bands like Tar Babies and
Monkey.
And one of my favorite groups back then was Tar Babies and MechMench and I don't know, did he record De Kreutzen too back in those days? I'm not sure.
Milwaukee.
Yeah, but still, the Midwest. We had to drive wherever we had to go. You know,
I think it's not far either.
Yeah, no, they're about an hour apart. Yeah. But so we did work with Butch, which
Mike Kelly ended up doing the cover.
Yeah, it was another Sir Drone actor was Mike Kelly. It all
was
related.
Actually an artist.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, and Kim has known Mike since I believe. When Kim lived in L.A.
Right.
Before she even moved to New York.
Guy. Although he also was in Ann Arbor for a while. He was in a version of Destroy All Monsters.
Yeah. And in a different version than Ron Ashton.
Yeah. I think after.
Okay.
Or maybe before. But it's much, not as much
it's more
rock
like,
and roll.
It's more like half Japanese or something. Like the early weird.
I saw Jad yesterday at the record store.
I didn't see him. He was at Waterloo.
Waterloo.
Yeah. I guess they had a Eco Stage of Willie's over there.
Oh.
Yeah, I think Jad was playing on that.
Okay, because where does he live at?
He lives outside here.
Oh, so he did move.
Yeah, he's on a ranch. He lives with a bunch of animals.
All right, Jad. All right. It was good to see him. I hadn't seen him in years. That was great. And so, Dirty, you're in the bus now.
Yeah, we're in a bus. We're traveling, and I don't know what to say. The tours are bigger, and I don't know. We're having a lot of good shows.
Yeah. And after Dirty,
we recorded experimental Jet Set.
That's right.
Trash and No Star.
Yeah, that title.
Yeah. Thurston had the title before we'd recorded a note. he was living in that title for a while, which I think is an okay thing. I remember him talking to Chris Robinson of the Black Crowes at some festival, and Thurston's laying this title on him, and I guess Chris Robinson liked the title, but I think he was into the idea of having a title before having your record. Yeah, so it's kind of like Austin, Texas. You know, they had the fake bands that had the flyer bands. You know, like the Dicks and the Big Boys were flyer bands.
Flyer
before,
bands, yeah.
Before they'd ever played, they just made flyers. Like
this might be what it's like. Yeah. You might want to see these guys
if you only could.
If they'd only play. Flyer band.
Yeah, so that was the title, and that was a weird record. We sort of
took a trippy one.
Took a step back from the progress that we made with Goo and Dirty, and kind of the sound was getting bigger, and we wanted to make a little bit more natural sounding record, not as pumped up as Dirty was. I love Dirty, but it's a little pumped though, and. So this one is a little more naturalistic. We recorded with Butch again, but we didn't have Andy Wallace mix this time, who we'd brought in.
That's
Andy
right.
With Dirty. And it was a lot of fun working with Butch. He's just such a nice character, a nice guy.
Yeah.
And I guess Kim was pregnant with Coco during the making of this record.
Also, so, that movie Marky made.
Which
no, that actually is Dirty.
Yeah, that's early.
Right, 1991.
Is before Dirty. It's between Goo and Dirty. And
I got to ask about that because that changed a lot of stuff just as the scene being more exposed.
Yeah, we went on a festival tour of Europe, and we wound up playing night after night with a lot of these bands that we knew, which were Nirvana, who were our current favorite band at that time. We just loved these guys. And Babes in Toyland and Dinosaur Jr.,
right.
And I think other bands were coming and going, but mostly we played with Babes, Dinosaur, and Nirvana every day. And you know, doing these festivals like Reading and these German festivals, it was just a great time. And Dave came over to film the tour. Dave Markey did. And one of the first days that we were on this tour, I don't know, we'd seen on one of the MTV channels. Motley Crue had just given a concert at this huge stadium, and I guess Thurston kind of liked Motley Crue back then, and maybe in an ironic way, but we weren't really interested in that world too much. And Motley Crue at this concert performed not God Save the Queen, but what's the other most popular?
Anarchy in the UK.
Yeah, Anarchy in the UK. And it just really blew Dave Markey's mind that, you know, this band from Sunset Strip is playing a big stadium in the UK and playing a Sex Pistols song. And that's kind of where this phrase, "the year that punk broke," came from. And just like, we felt like it was so twisted, and we and the funny thing is we didn't know how much more twisted it was going to get in 6 months when Nevermind came out. You know, this was before Nevermind, and we just thought it was, you know, the funniest thing, and that, you know, no one really ever understood what we were doing or what the indie scene was about. We still felt that it was a secret world.
Yeah.
And
like that Germ song.
Yeah.
What we do.
Yeah, it was for a long time, and it still is to a large degree, even though there's been a little bit more writing about it. No one's really written about, you know, there's been one or two books, but it's a pretty much undocumented era.
Yeah, like, even those books, they don't really...
Yeah, Our Band Could Be Your Life, it didn't... I'm not sure if it's really, really captured a lot of what's happened, but just Dave is such a character and such a funny guy, and he was into this, the year that punk broke, and it was just such a
My favorite
great
scene
phrase.
Is with Dave Grohl and Chris Novoselic in the dressing room with the chow.
Yeah,
with
yeah.
The olives.
Yeah, yeah. They're living large. And I guess Thurston felt he had to, you know, someone points a camera at musicians and most of us like run away,
yeah,
you know.
He got into it.
And so Thurston like felt like he sort of had to carry this thing and give Dave something to play with. So Thurston really ran with it. And
the most bizarre scene is with ducks. You know, it's like, man, this guy's working it.
Well, it was sort of like, it was sort of surreal being in Germany at this time and, you know.
Ducks.
Well, there was a t-shirt with a duck with a mohawk and it just didn't make, you know, duck, punk, where what's the connection besides the U and the K, you know.
Well, leap back forward. After Jet, No Trash, Star.
We didn't tour that year.
Yeah, right, because
we had a
new arrival
for Kim and Thurston. So, so Thurston recorded this Dim Stars record with Richard Hell and Don Fleming.
And even Chad, I think he does sax on Rip Off.
Chad does, yeah, that's right. So we started just, you know, working and doing whatever we could, and we didn't tour for another year, I think.
And Washing Machine's next.
Yeah.
And you do that in Memphis?
We recorded at Easley's studio in Memphis, and we mixed it up in New York. And
Kim stops playing bass, kind of.
Kim played a lot of guitar on that one. She plays bass on a couple tunes, but she starts playing a lot of guitar, and to Kim, it was never she stopped playing bass. It's like she returned to guitar because she played a lot on the first record.
Right.
And on the second record, too, because Thurston's playing bass on a number of tunes on Confusion. So we do Washing Machine, and then this Lollapalooza tour comes up. And we just never expected that would really happen, you know, and we said, well, you know, and we're finishing up Washing Machine. We're all kind of on the fence about doing this thing, and we're all calling Pavement and Jesus Lizard and Beck, and like, well, what are you going to do, you know, and what are you guys going to do, are you really going to do it, and when it sort of got to this point, like, well, we'll do it if you do it, and so, you know, we'd only go if our buddies were going,
yeah, right.
So this tour comes about, and
I did a leg of it.
Yeah.
And not one of them was Austin.
And it actually turned out to be a good tour for us, I felt like we really learned how to play on a stage like that, and that helped us for, you know, for whenever you open, you know, for bands like Pearl Jam or something. I always feel like ever since we did Lollapalooza, we really know how to work those stages. Because a few years before that, we'd open for Neil Young,
and it was a
challenge. Those are tough rooms to play, those arenas and amphitheaters.
Yeah.
And now, today, after we've done so many festivals and we've done the opening tours, I feel like we can go on any stage and I know that we can play some music. We can do something. So I don't worry about that stuff so much anymore. I know it's nicer for the audience if we're in a theater or a small club or a large club that that the kids like, but I feel that we can still put on a show whichever room you put us in.
And after that's the Leaves.
Thousand Leaves?
Thousand Leaves.
Yes.
Who'd you do that with?
That was the first record that
with
we...
Jim?
No, we recorded with Warden. That was
that's right. That's
because after we did Lollapalooza, we set up our own studio, and yeah. That's when we set up the Murray Street Studio. And so we started recording the SYR series, these instrumental records, and then we recorded Thousand Leaves with Wharton around that time. So that was the first one we did at a at-home studio.
Right, right. And Jim?
Jim wasn't there yet.
No,
Jim didn't come around till the end of the next one when we recorded New York City Ghosts and Flowers. We recorded
right.
with Wharton, but Jim helped us finish it. And he did a few overdubs, and he helped us mix it. And then we were having such a good time with Jim. We were at
come
that,
on, man.
Yeah, he was like, come on and play some of these parts on the road. So he became the fifth person in the band, and we did a number of years with him. And,
yeah.
Two full records with him, where we recorded Murray Street with Jim and Kim alternating on guitar and bass.
Right.
And then...
sometimes Power Book.
Yeah, not too much, though. I always thought he was going to do more of that when he joined. I was always kind of looking forward to that sort of... Eno sort of treatment thing, you know, and he I think Jim really wanted to play in a traditional band when he got it, you know, he wanted to play bass and guitar and do dual leads with Thurston, so we did the Murray Street and Sonic Nurse, and we did both of those at our place on Murray Street.
But he leaves after Sonic.
Yeah,
recording.
He toured with us, and then for quite a while after that record, and then he. It became apparent that he wanted to work on other things and
move.
Yeah, and he wanted to move to Tokyo, and he lives there now. And we're going to see him in a couple of weeks.
Soon.
We're going to Japan, and we'll see Jim there. And it's always good to see him.
But there's still five on the road.
Now there
the
is.
Band,
yeah, yeah.
But Mark Eyeball.
Well, after Jim left, we wrote and recorded Rather Ripped as four of us, and Kim thought that some of the songs would be difficult for her to play bass and to sing, and so we asked Mark to play bass on some of those songs, and just we kept him on stage the whole night, and so, you know.
A lot of times there's two bass.
Yeah, yeah, so they do double bass.
Thurston comes on bass.
Yep, so Mark's been with us for the last year, and he's going out with us this summer, and it's been a real blast. Playing with Mark.
But Rather Rip was recorded as four piece.
Yeah, we recorded as a four piece. He didn't record on it.
So that's going way back.
Yeah,
before Jim. Not way back. How long was Jim with the band?
I don't know, like 5 years.
5 years.
It went by fast.
Yeah. I got to spend a week with him at his pad.
Yeah.
Interesting cat, man. Really. You get to see him again soon. So
He speaks Japanese now.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
His mind, he could pick shit up, cat. Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I've gone out with him in Japan, and he's there just doing the do. You know, he's talking and leading us and taking us around.
He's got a pad.
Yep.
So, the next record. Is there a plan?
No, there's no plan. Okay. Right now, we've got a busy summer planned. We're going to do some of these Daydream shows, and we're going to get the Daydream Deluxe out. We've got a couple SYRs lined up that we're working on. Some of them with Jim, some of them things that Jim worked on or mixed on. So even some of that stuff's in the vault that we wanna scoot it out and I think, you know, if we get lucky, we'll have some time to get together and write some this summer, because that's usually what happens.
Summertime.
Yeah, summertime we get together and either play or write.
Well, man, I really look forward to seeing the Daydream. That's a trip.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
And then, of everyone's course, waiting for the next album, too.
And everyone's asking us what we're going to do with Providence, so I don't know, you know.
Is
there going to stand up there and play a cassette, or
hold
we,
the cell phone,
or are we
going to call in
we're going to satellite you in, yeah.
Steve, thanks so much.
You gotta go
jam. Play the Stooges gig. But this has been Righteous Talk. Thank you for coming on my show.
Thank you, Mike.
Okay. And we'll do it again.
All right.
I have to on the phone.
Okay. Anytime.
You're an interesting cat.
Anytime.
And I know you got a lot of music coming, and thanks for the invite on the Enrique Moretti.
Yeah, yeah.
Morente.
Morente, yeah.
All right. Lo siento, Enrique. And, yeah, you guys, hold tight. I got to get ready for a gig. So thank you for coming by again, Steve. And
Samara, too.
It's time to wake up. It's time to bail. We got to play some of her music. I think she's snoring. Okay, people. Say bye, Steve.
Goodbye.
March 17th, 2000. Wait a minute. You know, the first two parts of this, hour one and hour two, except for portion the first hour, was March 17th, but it actually is March 19th, 2007 right now. And it's the way things worked out. The gig came on us. Here's part eight of Jack Flanders and the Ghost Islands.
Mojo, here's what I'm thinking. From what we've been told, most of the time the islands are a mirage. If you approach them, as we tried, they simply recede or just dissipate into mist.
Yeah, but sometimes they're solid.
Right. And I suspect it's not just random, but there's a pattern. Look at this.
What is this?
It's a printout from Bunny's laptop.
And what are we dealing with here? This is about the moon and the tides and the weather and time of year. Whew, that's a pretty complex set of calculations.
I know. And look at this. Percentages, density points, how solid it is at any one point.
I wish we knew about this before.
Well, you can see here on the 6th, when we tried to approach the Ghost Islands, that was not a good day.
Yeah, we were looking at a 12% possibility.
But see here, the morning of the 3rd, when Bunny took the dinghy and didn't return.
87%. She knew all this? Where did she get it?
I think she lifted it from Claudine's computer. And she copied it onto hers.
So Bunny is a hacker.
Well, we always suspected she was a smart kid.
Then she knew about these Ghost Islands way before we did.
Yeah. She may have been hacking Claudine's computer ever since we started on this voyage.
Bunny knows more about what Claudine's up to than we do.
I don't know. But she did figure this out.
You told Claudine?
Not yet.
Hey, look here. If this chart is close to accurate, we're talking a 91% coming up. And then it drops way down and it's gone.
Yeah, I saw that.
Now, that's a pretty thin portal to squeeze through.
Let's not mention this to Dominique.
Why?
Because she'll want to come along.
I'm surprised you haven't considered the benefits.
What benefits?
If you bring her along, you can always leave her there.
Leave her marooned on the Ghost Island?
Oh, come on. I'm not being serious.
Brilliant, Mojo.
Oh, man!
Claudine, we have to talk.
I need your help.
What?
You were right. I can't do this alone.
Okay.
But I can't tell you everything.
Look, I have no idea what's going on, why we've come here, or what you're trying to do, but just tell me what I need to know.
These islands, the Ghost Islands, are part of the world that are not visible. At least to the eyes of most people.
Except the Ghost Islands are visible. Well, one island.
They are disappearing.
I noticed that. Oh, are you saying forever?
Yes.
Do you know why?
No.
Do they know why?
Do you mean those who inhabit the islands?
Yeah, the Fuzzies.
I don't know.
You've seen them?
Yes, I have.
In the town?
That evening, when you saw me and heard me talking to myself? I was trying to communicate to one of them.
Oh, so that's what it was.
Yes.
But how come Bunny can see them so clearly?
Bunny is special. That's why I asked her to come with us.
So you could use her?
No.
Well, now she's on that island and the island has vanished.
It will reappear.
Mojo and I tried to land on that island, but it was like landing on a mirage.
It will be different.
And if it disappears while we're on it, what then?
Improvise.
Will Mojo be with us?
I hope so.
And Dominique?
Yes.
Why?
So you don't get bored?
Oh, great. All right. When do we go?
Tonight.
In the dark?
There will be a full moon.
I just remembered what Rose said. When the moon begins to wane, so do the islands.
This is our only chance.
And that's why we're finally talking about this?
Jack, I need your support.
Okay. I'll tell Mojo.
Jack?
Yeah?
I'm frightened.
You are?
Yes.
How dangerous is this?
I don't know. This isn't what I thought it would be.
What did you expect?
Not this.
She finally told you?
Well, she didn't tell me much.
So, tonight we're stepping out on the island?
You got it.
Uh-huh. But this time, the captain hops out of the boat first.
I guess it's my turn to walk on water, huh?
I don't know about you, but I'm bringing along my inflatable Mickey Mouse shoes.
Well, whatever works.
If that island decides to disappear while we're on it, you better be able to walk on water.
There are places on this planet where other worlds intersect. You experience that in Montreal. Sometimes that intersection provides an energy for both sides.
Well, that's why here in San Miguel, the return of the islands was seen as a blessing?
Yes.
Equally for both sides?
I don't know about that.
And as this planet becomes more populated, these places disappear. Is that it?
Not always.
Well, what happened here? Why the change?
I don't know. But now it's time to find Bunny.
Okay. I'll wake up Mojo.
It was a little after 3 when we set off for the island. Now, that's 3 in the middle of the night. I noticed Mojo was wearing a necklace. In fact, he was wearing all kinds of odd little bone carvings of skulls and weird faces.
So what are those? For protection?
No. I just brought along some trinkets to trade with the native.
Ah, those are amulets. Don't try to kid me.
I want to look my best.
Jack, leave him be. Mojo, you look very stylish.
Yeah, what style is that? Borneo grunge?
Oh, come on. I left my monkey skull necklace back home.
Monkey skulls? Really?
He's not serious.
Well, don't be too sure about that.
There it is. It's coming into view.
Cut the motor, Jack.
In the moonlight, that place is nice and spooky.
There's no surf. Do you hear it?
Ah, that's not good.
Yeah. Not sounding very solid, is it?
We'll wait. We have time.
And so we drifted closer and closer to the island. And as Mojo said, in the moonlight, it was appearing more ghostly than ever.
They got bugs.
What?
I can hear bugs.
Yes.
Night bugs. Sawing away.
Yes, there are more sounds now.
Now I can hear the surf.
Jack, bring us into shore.
As we approached, the island from a misty, ghostly mirage to a silvery silhouette with palm trees, hills, cliffs, and cold, shimmering sand. It was the same beach Mojo and I had tried to land on before.
So, Captain steps out first, right?
No, ladies first. Dominique?
Oh, man, you're bad.
I'll go.
Good.
Better hang on to the boat just in case.
Over I go.
What's it feel like?
Oh, wet.
You didn't sink.
Come on, jump in.
I think I'll just ease myself over easy. Oh, yeah. We got something real here.
Started off the third hour with part 8 of Jack Flanders and the Ghost Islands. Then we had Spot Albert. Now, I don't know the Albert cat, but I do know Spot. Many, many years. He's a cat who did the first Minutemen records, Husker Du, Meat Puppets, Black Flag. He's a beautiful man. He lives in Austin now, and he is a version of Irish music he calls Smeltic. So, I didn't get to see him when I was in Texas because he was busy. It was St. Patrick's Day, and he plays a lot of Smeltic for the Celtics. Huh? Love you, Spot. Then we had many birthdays with Freeway. I did meet the bass player Many Birthdays by End of a Ear Record Store. Right out front, his name was John. He is a very nice man. I believe it was John. I hope so. And I love their band. And yeah, their trip. And then we had Udu Maki Dos with Sagittarius. And I'm Sagittarius. Archer man, one of the last couple days, maybe the last day. In December, and I wonder if Dos, I wonder if he said it right, first of all, but I wonder if it means two, also. Here's some Truckee Brothers.
Love's making the secret. I can't keep my mouth shut. Still waking a cop for election. That helped the woman of color protection. Pretty, eloquent. Pretty, eloquent. Yeah, pretty, eloquent.
People say, what do you want, what are you called, you know, by most people. And I suddenly realized I was Bernard Jury from when I was, till I was about 16. And then from 61 through till about, till 73.
I was Shane Fenton.
And then from 73 till the nearly 90s, we were on.
That's 20 years.
I've been Alvin Stardust. Alvin Stardust.
Alvin Stardust.
Alvin Stardust. Alvin Stardust.
sun before dawn, once before the tide, eyes upon the sea, watched the shores of time.
Well, Spero soltanto che il Signore mi aiuti. Spero soltanto che il Signore mi aiuti. Spero soltanto che il Signore mi aiuti.
Mr. Right Now by Apollo Nova. Before that, from Italy, Il Kif with Alluccia Nazioni. Position Normal before that with I've Been Alvin Starr, and we started there with Gritty Pretty, Truckee Brothers. And unfortunately, I didn't get to see them at that South by Southwest thing. But, yeah. I'll see them in San Diego. I want to play with them in San Diego. That's where they're from. They're good cats. Here's Captain Pleased.
Listen to the words of a poor man. Feel my pain. Feel my pain. I'm just a poor black man eating food without the trash, man. Feel my pain. So many dark days, rainy days, no kind of sun rays. Feel my pain. I'm just a poor black man eating food about the trash, man. Feel my pain. So many dark days, rainy days, no kind of sun rays. I never had a thing in my life. I'm just crawling with my skin in the night of concrete. Yeah, that's my bed, uncombed. In about 3 weeks, bright yellow is the color of my teeth. Get away from me, you stink, smelly bum. When I ask, what's the chance for some lunch? I'm looking for angels. All I see is demons laughing at me. For my death, they're a fiend. I got no job, no career. I'm born a loser, staring at the ground, drunk in a stupor. So much pain. Zero all my life. I've been called a zero. Even my moms threw me on the streets at the tender age of 13. I became a man before I grew into a man eating scraps up off this wasteland. Stomach pains. I can see my frail ribs. I'm looking like an anorexic chick. I'm just a broke person born in the gutter all my life. I just had to suffer. No bus pass or moving car. My transportation on foot, life is hard, it won't end. The same sad song, feel my pain. This is not a happy song. So much pain, when will it go away? When I die away, I hope I see heaven's gate. So much pain, when will it go away? When I die away. Way, I hope I see heaven's gay.
Sorry about that. Had to fade down on the Now Trio. But that was most of their tune. It's called Desperter or Despertar. I don't know that word. I'm ignorant. So I must be learned. Sorry. There's a neat thing, though. I think they're up from up in the Northwest. Feel My Pain from Lone Star. I think he's a Texas cat. And Bug by Cap'n Please started off that chunk there. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he's from Idaho. Yeah, my memory sometimes, you know. Anyway, I want to thank Mr. Steve Shelley for coming on board and really lightening up my thing there. Thurston did too. Stooges. There were some great people there. Texas for the Southwest thing. Just getting to see Bob again. That was righteous. And, well, next week, I got a tour in 2 weeks with the Stooges. I think the first gig's the 5th in Washington, D.C. So check the Hoot page. HOOTPAGE.com for that kind of infos. And check out Steve Shelley's label, Smells Like Records. That's SMELLLIKERECORDS.com. Again, thank you, Steve. And I'll do another show this weekend here in Pedro. So this is the, well, you know, March 17/March 19 edition of the Wild from Pedro show. Keep your powder dry.